Okay, well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm absolutely delighted to be here in Athens with Capital Link, with Nicholas, and with all of you. And you know, I think it's really a great time to be talking about the global economy and world trade, because really we're at a crucial juncture. You know, we've seen some signs of improvement, but is this just the calm before the storm? Is the euro crisis really over? What will the rise in oil prices do to global growth? Over this presentation, I will try to shine some light on those issues, as well as presenting our forecast for world GDP and world trade for this year. Now, I like to I usually like to start off presentations with some positive news. This has been quite difficult over the last year, as you can imagine. But actually, we have had some positive signs recently. So now I really am going to start with some positive news. And to start with, what we see is that the global economy, after a significant slowdown through much of last year, has started to show signs of bottoming out. And on the first chart, we see the bellwether manufacturing PMIs. These are good indicators also of world trade. And there we see bottoming out in Europe, in the US, globally as well. And really, it's not just a matter of the developed markets. We also see the same pattern going on in the big emerging markets, which have also started to show signs of a pickup from low levels, but the global economy is no longer losing momentum. What explains these positive trends? Well, it's a return of global easing. Central banks across the world have been pumping money into the financial system. This chart shows the central bank balance sheet. Just like post Lehman Brothers, central bank assets are moving up again. The money supply is growing again. And again, this is not just the advanced economies, also in emerging markets, which had been raising interest rates for most of last year to try and curb inflationary pressures. They have recently started cutting interest rates. We've already seen interest rate cuts in Brazil, in Russia. The Reserve Bank of India is signaling interest rate cuts. And although the People's Bank of China has not cut its policy rate yet, it has reduced its reserve requirements for banks, which means that bank lending there will also start to pick up. Now, what has been absolutely crucial has been the role of the ECB. At the end of last year, analysts, bankers, the financial community were very worried about a liquidity crunch for the European banking system. Now, the ECB is coming in an aggressive way and provided banks with liquidity in the form of unprecedented three-year loans, which have averted a severe credit crunch. And as you see from the graph, ECB lending to banks has reached an astonishing 800 billion euros. And we see the effects of this all throughout the financial markets. Following the ECB loans, investors have become much less concerned about bank defaults in Europe. We've seen European bank CDS prices falling significantly, and investors have become also more willing to provide financing to banks. So banks are less under pressure. And it's not just the banks. In sovereign markets too, in government debt markets, we see improvements. This slide shows that Italian and Spanish government bond yields have fallen sharply since the ECB's first three-year loan operation, and that's because banks have used some of the money that they've taken from the ECB and bought government bonds with it. Actually, since the ECB's three-year loan operation, the numbers show that Italian and Spanish banks have bought more than 100 billion of their own debt. And we have another three-year loan actually today, coincidentally, and that should encourage these kind of trends to continue. We've seen improving risk appetite, a move higher actually across asset classes. Now, before anyone gets too excited, okay, we've seen better economic data, we've seen better financial market conditions. Does that mean that the good times are back again? Can we start popping open the champagne bottles? Well, actually not. There are still significant risks to the global outlook, and there are a number of drags which suggest that the recovery is likely to be a rather slow one. Let's start with the risks, and then I'll go on to the drags in a minute. Okay, well, the first risk is the rise in oil prices that we have seen. We've seen roughly a $10 rise, which actually is enough to strip half a percentage point off global growth. This, of course, reflects worries about worst-case scenarios developing in Iran, which is, of course, a major oil producer. Our oil analysts and our Middle East analysts expect these tensions to subside and oil prices to decline again in the second half of the year. But of course, there is still a risk because of the situation in Iran of a major oil price spike. So that's one risk to consider. The other risk is, of course, that the debt crisis in Europe has eased, but has not completely gone away. And here I focus a bit on the Greek PSI. You see before you some scenarios for Greek debt. The green line is the Euro IMF scenario of a Greek debt moving back to 120% of GDP. But, of course, that's not going to be easy. You know, Greece has done very well in putting in place austerity measures over the last couple of years, but more austerity in the face of what is a very deep recession could lead to a further missing of targets. Even if the 120% of GDP is reached, that's not a very good level of debt. It's still actually too high. So in our view, we are likely to need to see another additional PSIs, maybe additional bailout programs. Although we think that Greece will adjust in the euro, it's not likely to be an easy ride. So what that means is that, and the same goes for other countries, you know, Italy is in recession, Spain is in recession. We could see the missing of targets. We may need to see more bailouts. So essentially that could spark financial tensions again in Europe. And then the question is, do we have enough firepower in place? Do we have a strong enough firewall to contain these problems and ensure financial stability in Europe? And unfortunately, at the moment, the answer to that question is no. This graph shows the Euro IMF funds, which are remaining at the moment, versus what you would need to bail out Italy and Spain in a worst-case scenario. And clearly, this shows that the financial safety net is not big enough yet. So policymakers have been doing a lot, but there's more work to do. If investors start to become worried about sovereigns again, then they'll start to become worried about banks again, because, of course, banks, as this graph shows, are loaded up with peripheral sovereign debt. You know, if there was a string of defaults, you would actually see the whole banking system at risk once again. And we could see again the renewal of the vicious circle, which had actually started at the end of last year between between governments and banks and financial markets and economic growth. So we need more action, and obviously the onus is on these guys and girls. For a long time they've been pointing at each other. It's not about me, it's about you. Monty has to do it, and so on. Of course, the truth is to any reasonable person is that we all have to do it together. And I think that the southern European countries have now done their bit. They've put programs in place, and actually now it's up to really primarily Germany and other northern European countries to do their bit and actually increase the rescue facilities to contain financial tensions in Europe. Do we think that they're going to do this? I think that there is a very, very strong case for them to do it. The costs of bailing out countries, the costs of increasing these rescue funds, are much less than the cost of a re-escalation of the euro crisis, which could eventually amount to a euro breakup. So the economic logic, and I think in the end, any kind of logic suggests that they will do it. And actually, in our base case, we do think that over the coming weeks, this rescue fund will be increased. And that will be, I think, the beginning of really containing the euro crisis. So we have risks in terms of oil prices, we have risks in terms of the euro crisis, but in our base case, we think they will be contained, and the improvement in financial conditions that we've seen should foster a recovery later this year. Is that going to be a very strong recovery? Well, I don't think so. I think it's going to be a sluggish recovery, I'll put forward a few reasons for that. One relates to Europe. Even though the banks are under less pressure, they already started tightening lending conditions around the turn of the year, this is something which, even though the situation improves, that takes time, and that will continue to weigh on growth. The other point, and this is absolutely crucial, is that there is a new fundamentalism in Europe. It's not political fundamentalism or religious fundamentalism, but a kind of fiscal fundamentalism. Everyone is crazy about budget cuts. And you see here, the budget cuts that we're going to see over the next few years, which are really huge as a proportion of these economies. This will really be another factor weighing on growth. And indeed, if you look at the Eurozone economies, we do expect a recession. Actually, we're already in recession, with a contraction in overall GDP in most economies this year. It's worse in Southern Europe, where you have much bigger fiscal austerity and less in the North. But essentially, the whole of Europe will experience a recession. Now, the U.S. economy is actually doing better. We see continued growth. One of the reasons is that the labor market has been improving, job growth is picking up, unemployment is coming down. That should support consumer demand, which is, of course, a very important driver of world growth. But the U.S., too, has its drags. One drag is fiscal policy. In the U.S., too, we see around 1% of GDP of fiscal tightening this year. The housing market, which in the past has been a major driver of growth, is still going through an adjustment phase. So although the U.S. should continue to grow, do not expect a boom there either. Then finally, going on to the emerging markets, focusing here on emerging Asia, there too we're likely to see more moderate growth than in the past. I mean, one reason is that they rely on the West for their exports, around a third in many of the big economies. And if you have moderate growth or even recession in Europe and the US, that's also a drag on Asia. In addition, although we are seeing monetary easing now in Asia, it's quite moderate. it's not like 2009 where they really opened up really aggressive easing took place. Now we're talking about much more moderate easing. These economies will still grow at rates that we can only dream about, 8% or so. But it's not going to be the double digits which really drove powerful expansions in world growth and world trade in the past. Okay, well, let me conclude by presenting our forecast, putting some numbers to some of these thoughts. In terms of the year average for 2012, we see quite a significant slowdown in both global GDP and world trade. Lower than 2011 and much lower than 2010. Obviously, it's not a disaster. I mean, we still see growth. I mean, world trade growth of 4.5%, far from booming, but still growth. In addition, these year averages hide the dynamics during the year. The slowdown mainly reflects the slowdown we saw at the end of last year and the start of this year. But during the course of this year, in sequential terms, we should see a gradual pickup in most places. So, it's not an incredibly optimistic story, but it's not the kind of economic Armageddon that people were fearing maybe in the second half of last year either. It's a story of slow recovery with still some negative risks. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much for listening. I don't know if there's time for some questions or... Any questions? Yes, sir.
My question is, there is easing, and we saw that yesterday with the ECB funneling more money into the economy. But is that going to trickle down? Are we going to see easing of lending? Are we going to see an impact on the consumer? Are we going to see an impact on the people? Or are we just going to see the banks feeling eased?
Well, I think the first round impact, and that's where you see it, really big time, is in the financial markets, of course. And the improvement in financial markets, of course, a positive generally also for the economy through a number of channels. As for the banks, I think that it will reduce pressure on them. And at least what we can say is that it's taken away a very negative scenario. At the end of last year, it could have been that banks would have had to deleverage very, very rapidly. And the ECB loans have at least prevented that. For the rest, it's probably unreasonable to expect a big pickup in bank lending. Banks are still under pressure, but at least the negative scenarios of massive deleveraging in the banks, which of course would have hurt the real economy, are off the table now.